I was an earnest young do-gooder, and in the summer of 1981, I was volunteering with a group called Los Niños, which means the children in Spanish. And our mission was to collect food and other donations from around California and drive them across the border to Tijuana and deliver them to various places, such as, there were several orphanages, and then the city jail where the inmates were not regularly fed. And then there was a sort of a shanty town that surrounded the city dump. And the headquarters of Los Niños was an old army barracks, which we called Rancho Justicia. And this was a few miles from the border between San Diego and Tijuana. And so that summer, there were about a dozen of us just staying there solidly through the summer with the founder and leader of this group, who I will call the Saint. And the Saint was a middle-aged man who had abandoned his family to take up this work, a very charismatic guy. And so there was 12 of us, and then on the weekends, our ranks were swelled by this influx of church groups and other just sort of random people who came down to do this work and also to get their consciousness raised about the causes of third world poverty, which was another part of our mission. So our work was we'd sort the donations, prepare food, load up vans and trucks, and go wait at the border for a couple of hours, then drive across the border and deliver these things. And then we also offered other assistance. For example, the orphanages were always short-staffed, so we would help take care of these babies and children all day, or we helped build a school at the dump and visit the prisoners in the jail and that sort of thing. Then at night we'd wait for a couple of hours, you know, in our sweltering vans or sitting in the back of a truck, you know, with the sun beating down on us, and we come back across the border, go back to Rancho Justicia, where we would sit cross-legged in a circle and listen to the Saint or another guest speaker hold forth, usually about the evils of capitalism, and then we would pray to a kind of peace-loving socialist Jesus, and we would hold hands and we would sing lefty work songs and that. So you get the picture. And the Saint had established, if not a cult at Rancho Justicia, a very strong culture. He required us really to live simply like the poor. So our diet consisted of just tortillas and rice and beans and a few fruits and vegetables. No sugar, no meat allowed, and cold showers only, no hair dryers, no TV or radio. So the inhabitants, the 12 core people that summer, included the Saint and me, and then the Saint's very, very young girlfriend, which seems to be kind of a perk of starting your own culture. And then there was Sister Radical, who was the lefty nun at my high school, had gotten me into this work. And then there was this lovely young, this very sweet young minister who was also a wonderful painter named Peter, and he was in love with a young woman, just gorgeous, kind of hippie free spirit named Lark. And then there was Bob, the driver of the biggest delivery truck. You know, we had to have like an actual truck driver, and Bob was very very odd. So I was way into Los Niños and the lefty politics and the socialist Jesus. I was way into it. But I had this particular conflict that summer because Prince Charles was going to marry Lady Diana Spencer on July 29th. And I'm down there at the border and where there's no TV. And even if there had been a TV, I wouldn't have been allowed to watch the royal wedding. So I was all about the class struggle. I really was. But I was also way into royalty, especially English royalty. And I had been following Queen Elizabeth and her family my entire life. This was an activity I shared with my mother, biographies and television specials and everything. And also the previous year, I had been a junior abroad in Scotland, and Charles had proposed to Diana, and no British subject had been more excited than I was when this when this happened. So I really had to be a part of this royal wedding. But I had no car, and I had no money. So how was I going to get to Los Angeles? So it's like a four-hour journey to Los Angeles. Well, it turned out, I just had my ear to the ground, because I'm not going to announce this plan, right, that Bob had to pick up some groceries from like a grocery chain, a donation up in Los Angeles the night before the royal wedding. So I asked him if I could ride along, and he said yes. But the thing is, Bob was scary weird. So he was, well, everybody else was kind of relaxed and warm and friendly, except Bob was very stiff and tense and serious, and he had just very poor social skills and no sense of humor. And he was okay looking. He was actually kind of nice looking. He was kind of tall and slim, red hair, a permanent sunburn, but he had these super, super thick glasses, and behind the glasses, his eyes didn't cooperate, you know, with each other. So one was looking at you, and then one was kind of doing its own thing, and so everybody was kind to Bob, because we were good people, but no one really wanted to hang out with him. And so then I find myself on July 28th, you know, at night in a cab of this truck alone with Bob, 4 hours to Los Angeles. But luckily, talking is my superpower. So I just chattered and chattered the whole way, and then we listened to the radio and stuff, and Bob only did one weird thing, and that is he put his hand on my knee and told me I had nice legs. And I just sort of removed his hand and thanked him kind of coldly, and then moved over to my door, and he never tried anything like that again. So I get home, I'm so relieved, and I watch like 20 hours of wedding coverage with my mother while eating meat and chocolate. And then I sleep in a comfy bed in an air-conditioned home. And then Bob picks me up, and I make the awkward journey back down to the border, and no one's the wiser, right? Well, a few days later, the saint called an emergency meeting early in the morning. This was unprecedented. Nobody knew what was going on. And so we all are gathered in our big room in our circle, and the saint announces that during the night, Peter, the young minister, had taken a walk, and when he returned to his room, all his paintings, he did beautiful landscapes on large canvases, and they were all set up all around his room. All of them had been slashed to ribbons. And this was shocking. And so the saint, detective-like, questioned us as a group, trying to get to the bottom of this, and no one had anything helpful to say. So he sent us to our rooms, and he told us to stay in our rooms until he discovered who the culprit was, and he would question us one by one. So now we had a genuine Agatha Christie situation. So we've got a big house in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and there's 12 suspects, right? Any of us could have done it. Except presumably the artist himself. So I wasn't about to sit alone in my room knowing there was some unbalanced person around, you know. So I went to Sister Radical's room, and we sat there for a couple of hours talking about everybody else and who might have had a motive and all this. It was actually kind of fun. But the saint never did get around to questioning me and Sister Radical, because before he did, he called a meeting, and we all gathered again and It turns out that Bob, under pressure, confessed to the crime. And he had done it out of jealousy, because he had been in love with Lark 4 months. And he could see, he knew that Peter was also in love with her, and he could see that Lark was falling in love with Peter. And he wanted to destroy something of Peter's that was precious to him. So the saint said that he had banished Bob. He wasn't going to call the police, but he was banished from Rancho Justicia. He was no longer a member of the community. And we would all stay in this room together until we heard Bob, you know, drive away. He was packing up his things. And so some people prayed. I prayed for Bob, but I also made a mental note to myself to maybe not get rides from people I didn't know very well, even when I wanted to get someplace really badly. Thank you.